Hello, and welcome to Total EM. This is podcast number 11. Now, last time's podcast number 10, was our first podcast with Dr. Jeff Jarvis, who has a very unique system. The EMS agency works with as a medical director, uses VL only. If you have not listened to it, stop this one, go back and listen to podcast number 10, then come back to podcast number 11, the one you're listening to right now. It will make a lot more sense, and it'll be a lot easier to work with. So that would be my main suggestion. Really, we are transitioning right where we ended last time, right into the beginning of this one. So without further ado, let's just go ahead and get started now. Can you talk about the channel? Because I don't think a lot of people are as familiar with the channel blades concept.
You bet. So there are two devices that I'm aware of, and I'm sure a vendor will hear this and squawk and say, you left me out. It wasn't intentional. I'm just not aware of them. There are two devices that I'm aware of that have both the hyperacute blade. I'm sorry, three. Hyperacute blade and a channel. And the idea behind a channel is you have your blade, and there's a little channel right on the blade that you can preload the ET tube into. So you lube the ET tube up and you slide it into the channel, and now you can manipulate both the blade and the tube with your left hand, and your right hand is free to do something else. Your right hand is free to either elevate the head if you need to, avoid, do some laryngeal manipulation, or what I teach is actually put a suction cath in that hand and suction and get stuff out of the way. That's the real benefit of it, is you can look around the corner and then just push the tube in, because it follows the curvature of that blade.
Do they have a stylet?
So I don't know. And with the hyperacute blade, so let me kind of go back to the standard geometry and the hyperacute angle geometry, if you will. With video laryngoscopy, you are almost guaranteed of getting an incredible view of the cords. Unfortunately, that doesn't do the patient any good. What does the patient some good is you getting the tube through the cords. Well, with hyperacute blades that are not channeled, for example, like the GlideScope and the CMAC D, which I actually really like, you look around the corner, you get this phenomenal view, but then you can't, because it's no longer a what you see is what you get environment, you can't make direct eye contact with the cords. So you're trying to get the tube to go into the cords just looking at it on the scope. With a GlideScope, I've had absolutely horrible, atrocious luck intubating without the stylet. So with the non-channeled blades, you use the stylet, and then it works fairly well. Now, I take a King Vision with me, so that's the only thing I use anymore. So if I do have to use a GlideScope, I always feel like I have to go through some gyrations once the patient is intubated to actually get the stylet out, because I just don't like people helping me when I do it. So if I were a smarter man, I'd just have my RT pull it out. I like to be able to do it myself. With the King Vision, you don't need that stylet at all. And as a matter of fact, the stylet gets in the way because the curve is handled by the blade and by the channel on the blade. So really, you just push down and it follows the angle of the blade, and the tube goes right in. We don't use a stylet with it. What I will do and what I teach is, because there are some circumstances where the tube won't go through, whether it's because of the angle or whatever the other issue is, I tell them to preload a bougie into the ET tube. Don't extend it out past the tube. Just leave it in the tube. So in case you need it, if the tube is going up to the cords but not quite going through, then you could advance the bougie and slide it over there. Fine, for the most part, it's not needed because that channel works so well. But if you do need it, it's there.
Perfect. Perfect. By the way, since we're talking about, we're naming a lot of brands and stuff, I just want to make it clear, I do not have anything to disclose. I'm not involved with any of these companies. Definitely don't have any financial interest. Is that same for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is. And thank you for bringing that up, because I do go around. I lecture on this a lot, and I talk a lot about the King Vision. When I'm doing a lecture, you know, there's something to prompt me. I don't have any conflicts. I've worked with the King Vision company. I did a training video for them, but they've never paid me. They don't give us free products. I don't get free products. So I have no disclosures on that whatsoever. I've published on it, but that's really based on our experience with the King Vision. And if a better product comes along, I would jump ship in a heartbeat. Assuming I could get our system director to write the check. I should be clear about that.
Yeah. Administration.
So, That's right. So he actually does a great job. We have most of the toys that I want, so I'm very fortunate to be where I am. Well, let me tell you, you mentioned the name brand. So
yes,
I don't have any conflicts, but I would like to mention the other. I mentioned there are three products that I'm aware of that have a hyper-acute angled channel blade. There's the King Vision, there is the Air Track, and then and I think they're still making it. It's called a Vivid Track. It's a metal laryngoscope that has a little cable with a USB port hanging off of the side. So it doesn't work by itself, but you plug it into some external display. At the time we were evaluating it, I saw one at ASAP at the convention center and plugged it into a laptop and thought that looked pretty neat. So we evaluated that. Then there is also the Air Track I mentioned. The Air Track, I call it the submarine laryngoscope because it looks like you're using a periscope. There's no display on it on the base model. There's the handle, a light, and the battery for the light, and then a little eyepiece. So you use that device almost exactly like you do the King Vision, but you're looking down directly into the eyepiece. There's no display. And the technology is, I'm assuming they use mirrors, just like with a periscope. So you can buy that device for, I don't remember what the price is, but it's essentially under $100. Now, AirTrack also has they have several adapters that you can use with it. There's an adapter that you can hook your iPhone onto and then use some apps on your iPhone to visualize and record. And they also have a head that sits down on top of that eyepiece and records and transmits and has a little video screen. So those are things that they've come out with since we made our decision. And interesting, I didn't know, those are the three that have the channel that I'm aware of. When we made our pick, I didn't pick it because of the channel. I didn't learn about the benefits of the channel until we really got in to start looking at our data and looking at our performance improvement things that we can do here to make the process better. I wanted a GlideScope because that's what I was used to. We had I forget what they call it. I call it the GlideScope on the pole. That's how it was mounted in our ER. But the first one we had was the Ranger, and I thought the Ranger would have been worse. But I wasn't able to consider it because we had 16, 17 units, ambulances, and I couldn't afford 17 Rangers. The system couldn't afford it. So I had to look at something else. And those are the three that we looked at. We took it up. I took a group of our new hires that were coming through our academy. We went up to a cadaver lab and just did a bunch of intubations with the King Vision, the Vivitrack, and the Air Track. The Vivitrack just didn't work well for us. And actually, that was the downfall to both of them. That we had to plug it into a laptop, and we couldn't figure out any place to put it that we would reliably have. So that one ultimately didn't work for us. We were tripping over cords and things like that. I know Air Track, like I said, has come out with some additional products now that had they been available at the time, we may have made a different decision, but we didn't. We went with the King Vision because we could afford it. It had that hyper-acute blade. And in hindsight, it has something I fell in love with, which is the channel.
Very nice. Which I've yet to try a channel blade one, so maybe I'll get a chance here soon.
Yeah, you'll love it. So you mentioned, I think, that you use the GlideScope.
Yes.
Mostly, correct?
Yes.
And do you use the rigid stylet that they ship with the product?
Most of the time. There's been a few exceptions, but almost always. One thing I don't like, which is what you talked about, usually without some sort of assistance, it can be a bit of a bear to, you know, you're trying to get past the core and trying to get the, you know, the little thumb, almost like a little thumb pop off there. And if you're in a tight space, it's not the easiest thing, and I've tried. I haven't done it with patients, but I've tried with simulation to use other stuff like a bougie or whatever. And it's, you know, give it credit to GlideScope. They came up with a pretty good product as far as what you use. It's just frustrating sometimes when you can't get that tube off without a little bit of a third hand there.
Right. I always feel like I, you know, have to put a little English on it as I'm getting. I find that I contort myself. So I always throw my elbow comes way up and my shoulder kind of leans forward as I'm trying to get my thumb to move forward without releasing the ET tube. But I mean, that's just me being nitpicky. The truth is all I have to do is ask somebody to pull the stylet out and it comes out just fine. So the main limiting factor for me with the GlideScope is we can't afford to put them on all of our trucks. I'll tell you the thing that I really like about the GlideScope that the King Vision does not have, and this is really an issue for me, is there's that little red button on the GlideScope.
Yes.
You can hit the little red button and record it, and then you can use that for training. I really feel the absence of the recording on the King Vision. It really bugs me. I review every one of our intubations, and for the most part, the intubations go fine. We don't have any problem. We have a pretty high first pass success rate, particularly outside of our cardiac arrest. But the medic will say, well, you know, I was kind of seeing, and then they try to describe what they're seeing. And it gets really frustrating. I get frustrated with the medics because they're not able to describe it better. And then as I feel that frustration rising, I tell myself to stop and remember what it was like when I was a student. And I'm trying to describe, you know, I have somebody standing over my shoulder as I'm trying to intubate. And they're saying, what do you see? What do you see? What do you see?
Mm-hmm.
I see this, you know, the coffee stain from your breath in my eyes. I see pink. I don't know what the hell I see. So it's hard for someone who's new at it to really be able to describe that well. Honestly, I think that's probably something we should train on, being able to describe it, but I didn't, and I remember how frustrating that was. So I know how frustrating it could be for them. It's less of an issue now because everybody on the scene can see what's going on. I mean, it's a real crowd pleaser. People love looking at that screen as you're intubating. All of our first responders jump around. Everybody wants to see it. But the problem is I can't see it unless I'm on the scene. So I can't really figure out what's going on, which frustrates me because as soon as I can figure out what's going on, I can develop some training to try to address it. So I really, really wish the King Vision had the ability to record. Okay. And I'll tell you what, I'm thinking about this. If you want, I can kind of go over our lessons learned with the King Vision and, things that I'd like to see on it, like recording and a shorter blade and things like that.
Sure, sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the things that may be useful is if I go over some of the things that we identified as we're going through our improvement cycles and we incorporated into our training that seem to have helped us when we're using the King Vision. Now, some of these are specific to the King Vision, but really I think most of them are pretty specific to, or pretty generalizable, I should say, to any of the hyperacute angled blades. And then some of these tips I think are applicable to any sort of intubation. So when it comes to the King Vision itself, there is what I call the head, which is where the screen is. And that has the batteries in the device. And then there is a disposable, detachable blade. So the blades you just throw away. And they do, by the way, make a channeled blade and an unchanneled blade. I'm obviously a huge advocate for the channeled blade. We don't have any unchanneled blades in our system. Every once in a while, our supply guy will get something happens in the supply chain. The unchanneled blades show up and they automatically get sent back. We don't get them anywhere near our trucks. So we found a couple of issues. The first thing that we found with that long blade is that if you hold you just pick it up. If you've never seen the King Vision before and you pick it up, you're going to pick it up by what is clearly designed to be the handle. I really don't like holding it there, and I have my medics. I'm a bit of a dictator when it comes to this. I really, in the training, I'll slap their hands and actually tell them, do not hold it there. No matter how comfortable it feels and no matter how obviously it was designed to be used as a handle, if you hold it there, almost inevitably what happens is you go in and you get this great view of the cords, but you cannot pass the tube. And the reason, if you go in and look at that, is that you can't see the epiglottis. You're actually in too deep. And I think this is something that's way too easy on almost all video laryngoscopes. And I think this is the hallmark of a failure. If you hold it by the handle, it's way too easy to go in too deep. So where I actually have them hold it is very, very low on the blade. I have them hold it right where the channel attaches to the blade. So it's almost, they're holding it almost at the curve. And if you're holding it there,
which oddly enough is how some people train and use the DL. That was kind of one of the ways I learned how to better hold the DL is to hold it close to the blade.
And like I said, some things are one of the reasons I like doing, well, I say like doing DL like that as though I actually use DL. But when I used to, the thing I liked was I would go in and initially get my view just using my fingers. And I would almost just be holding the blade. And then once I had to actually do some lifting and apply just, you know, whatever little force I had to apply, I'd slide my hand up a little bit, but primarily I'd hold the blade. So, yeah, I think that there's an absolute analogy there. So I have them hold it with several fingers. Don't white knuckle it. The harder you squeeze, the more likely are you to try to lift, and you're going to cause a problem. So I tell them to hold it low and light. So way down low, and then your thumb actually hits the lips before you can go in too deep. Now, it's not a guarantee. I mean, we're up to the task of overcoming that little safety gap. But usually by the time your thumb gets down to the lips, you're almost right where you want to see it. So number one is I tell them to hold it low and light. Number two is I tell them the first step of this, and this is something I wish I came up with, but I didn't, is they have to do epiglottoscopy first. So make sure they see the epiglottis. Go down, look for the uvula, go down midline until you see the epiglottis. If you can't see, if you see the cords and you don't see the epiglottis, you're in too deep, and more than likely the tube is not going to go in. And it will be incredibly frustrating to you. And you'll say things like, I had a perfect view, but I couldn't get the tube to go in. That, if you ever hear that, that means you're too deep. So I teach them to pull back until the epiglottis falls into place, and then pass the tube. So number two is they have to see the epiglottis. Being in too deep is a real issue. Now, the next thing that we found is that one of the downsides to video laryngoscopy is if you shove it in a bunch of blood and muck, it's not, shockingly, your camera's going to get occluded and you're not going to be able to see very well. And that is a potential benefit of DL. You can submerge the light on DL. And even though your lumens may drop, you know, it may not be as bright, you still have some light in there. And because you're looking directly at the cords, then you can probably still intubate. What I found is that they make this magic device. It's a long, hollow, kind of rigid plastic device that you can hook up to this tubing, and it goes into this neat little machine that makes a lot of noise. And it acts almost like a vacuum cleaner. It sucks stuff out. So with the channel, you can preload the ET tube, and now because you're manipulating the tube and the blade with one hand, your right hand is free for something. So go in and aggressively suction. And there is actually, this is one of the benefits of using Twitter, is I picked up quite a few nice tips. There's a gentleman named Jim DeCampo, who's an anesthesiologist who teaches about salad airways. And I was fortunate enough to be able to go down to a workshop he held with Starflight, the helicopter service just to our south. And he has some really nice mannequins that he has taught. They puke on command. They're very well trained. And he goes through teaching how to do suction-assisted laryngoscopy. So now, as we notice that this is a real problem, we teach to go in and suction first before you ever put the blade in. Because muck can foul up VL, the solution, and this is going to be a real, I mean, you never would have seen this coming. The solution is don't submerge the camera. So if you don't drop it down into the muck, it doesn't get dirty. And the way to do that is to suction aggressively. So we teach to just put the tip of the blade in the mouth to kind of get the tongue out of the way, start sucking, suck aggressively, and then gradually walk the blade down the tongue while keeping the level of nastiness distal and posterior to the light source and the camera, and that way your device doesn't get fouled. So the suction is the other big tip that we found. So those are the key things that we've identified. And then one final thing, particularly this comes into effect in Texas. I realize there are no fat people anywhere other than Texas. But
have you been to Missouri?
I kind of think we've cornered the market, but there are some large-chested people, large-bodied people. And then there are also the people that you're doing CPR on. We will intubate our CPR patients. We intubate all of them, as a matter of fact. We just don't do – we delay it. We actually don't do any active airway management for the first 6 minutes on our cardiac arrest. So that's a non-rebreather only, unless this is a primary respiratory problem. But for the cardiac arrest, we'll just use non-rebreather, focus on the compressions, and then intubate in a delayed fashion. But it is absolutely mandatory that you do not interrupt compressions. And we'll go through and review the biometric data coming off of the monitor to make sure we're not interrupting compressions to intubate. So the combination of that, putting your hands on the chest or a Lucas device on the chest to go up and down, and having a great big chest, makes it hard for a really tall device like the King Vision to actually get into the mouth. The reason for that is that blade, or the handle on the blade, is so long and it's such a hyperacute angle that you really have to put the blade down parallel to the chest and perpendicular to the mouth until you can make that turn, and then the device is sticking straight up. But getting it into the mouth is challenging because it's so long. What we teach is to decapitate it. We tell people to take the head off, which is the screen, take it off, put the blade in, then reinsert it and turn it back on. And the load time on the King Vision is like 2 seconds. So we can do that. So we teach doing that on everybody. You don't have to, but just be ready to do it. We train on it. So it's, if they have to, it's not an issue. The other option you can do is kind of put it in like an oral pharyngeal airway off to the side and rotate around. But most of us, myself included, have found that just decapitating it and sliding it in seems to work a little better.
Well, that is all a lot of great tips, and especially, you know, if I can try and get into back into the pre-hospital some and doing some stuff in that field. And there's been a place I was primarily doing EMS before. They had talked about doing VL. Need to talk to their administrator again, see where they've kind of fallen on that. But last I know, they kind of ditched it for a while. This was very early. This was many years ago, but at that time, they didn't really pick it up just because there weren't good cameras at the time for pre-hospital settings and whatnot. But it's interesting to talk about that because, I mean, it sounds like King Vision could also potentially be quite useful in a department setting, not just pre-hospitally, because you're talking about you use it all the time.
I do. I actually carry one in my backpack. I go into the emergency department, and if I have to intubate somebody, I use my King Vision. I have had to use DL. I found myself I was running a marathon, and I saw somebody drop, and somehow I'm still very fuzzy on how this actually happened. I ended up intubating them with whatever equipment they had, and it was DL. And I tell you, I was probably 19, 20 years old when I first learned to intubate. And what I learned is I would just flop myself, you know, patients were on the ground. I would flop myself belly down on the ground, get up on my elbows right in front of the patient, and I would intubate so that I could get a good view. Well, I'm 48 years old now, and it turns out I can still get down on the ground, but getting up turns out to be a little more of a challenge. Things seem to be a little stiffer and creakier. So I don't much like that. With the King Vision, I don't have to get down on the ground. I still intubate patients in the field every once in a while. And I can just, I've done it wearing dress clothes, and I can just squat down and I don't have to get all nasty, and I don't have to worry about whether I can stand up or not. So it was kind of nice going back into a field environment, having to use DL and realizing how much I missed my VL. I did, by the way, hear, as I did it, I heard Min in the background. I could hear his voice going, see what happens when you use only VL? You just said you always had one with you. Where's your VL now, buddy? Said, all right, fine.
Well, if Min wants to respond to the comments, he can go to totalem.org and post it there. So, speaking of, actually, that's a great point. If we forgot a particular product, as we were mentioning earlier, or if there was anything that you have questions directly for Dr. Jeff Jarvis about, or anything else that you would like to post or comment or whatever, that's good to go to totalem.org and post it there, and we'd be happy to respond. I can keep Jeff up to date as well about if there's any questions specifically for him. Is there any way you'd prefer people to contact you if they were to have questions from this directly?
Sure. There are a couple ways. You can get a hold of me on Twitter. I'm Dr. Jeff Jarvis, DrJeffJarvis. And you can also just email me at jjarvis@wilco.org. That's WILCO.org.
Perfect. I'm always interested. Like I said, you have an interesting system out there, and I'm really impressed by it. It's one of those, like I said, I may have to talk to you more in the future if we can get a little more pre-hospital VL in our area. Sounds like you've had a lot of practice with it. It sounds like your teams have had a lot of practice with it too, the medics and everyone. So like I said, we'd always be happy to have you back on the show. Any other kind of closing remarks you'd want to make?
I don't think so. Well, that's not true. Let me throw in one more for my performance measurement stuff. So we started down this path to VL, like we mentioned 4 years ago, because our metric was horrible. We were doing a horrible job intubating, and now I'm very proud of the job our medics are doing. I think they're doing a great job. But I looked at, I said, well, let's take a look at some balancing measures. Is there something that took a hit when we switched to this. And so I started looking at the incidence of peri-intubation hypoxia. And what I found is that we're doing a great job of the skill of intubation. I'm pleased with our first pass success rate. There's obviously still room for improvement, but I'm pretty happy with that. But it turned out we were having peri-intubation hypoxia about 66% of the time, which is roughly twice what the reported incidence of peri-intubation hypoxia in the emergency department is. So as a result of that, we stopped doing RSI altogether and now took the concept of delayed sequence intubation that Dr. Weingart talks a lot about, and we've implemented that here. So it's important that we focus on getting the tube into the right place, but that's a precursor to the total package. That's just one piece of it. So keep looking at the overall package. So that's kind of what we're doing now.
That's all amazing work. And I feel like every podcast so far where I've had an interview, you know, Dr. Weingart seems to be at the top of the list somewhere in there. So he snuck in yet again.
It's the power of foam.
Yes. Yep. Yes. Viva la foam ad. Well, on that happy.
Exactly.
On that happy note, I think we'll call this a wrap for the show. It may end up being a two-parter with the length, which is great. I always like more content. So, again, thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks a lot, Chip. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. This was fun. You have a great day.
All right, and that wraps up podcast number 11. So we've got a couple more podcasts coming up here soon. Don't worry, we're going to stick with the airway for just a little bit longer. Try not to dwell on the airway. I mean, we talked about ketamine for a while. I figured we talked about airway for a while. We're still working on some upcoming podcasts. We may do what's called patient and provider podcasts. Basically, it's going to cover both aspects that are good for patients to know directly, as well as helping probably more younger providers or ones with less experience in the fields that we're discussing. I would still encourage anyone to listen to it. It could be very beneficial. It's worth trying. We're going to be experimenting around like we have been doing. So listen to those. Give us feedback. We really want to know what you think. We want this to be for what people are interested in. I think this is going to help hit a wider audience and help make things make a little more sense. As always, just a friendly reminder, we really could use the help with iTunes. If you could give us a 5-star rating and give us a review, that really helps us out. We've already had a couple of people do it so far. I'm trying to figure out a way to maybe do a reward system for that just to kind of help boost us. I'm still working on that. I don't know exactly how, but just really, really, I'd appreciate if you take the time to do that. Also, if you have any questions, contact us via Twitter, Facebook, leave a comment here, email us directly, whatever you're comfortable with. I'd prefer if you guys left it public in some way. That way they can keep following and other people can see it too, especially if you comment directly on the website. But whatever is best for you guys, I really want to make this go and I really want to keep this open. Otherwise, again, we thank you for listening. We're now solidly in that double digits, and we're going to just keep going with these podcasts. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.